Welcome to our Created to Work podcast for Modern Day Daniels out of Calvary Memorial Church in Oak Park. This podcast is for our Daniel Dinner group at Calvary, which is made up of guys working in secular jobs who, just like the prophet Daniel, serve a God who works. We'll host guests from around the country who have thought about the topic of incorporating their faith into their work and who are themselves modern-day Daniels, impacting their communities. This is an experiment to see what we can learn and how we can grow as a community.
If we're sitting there and we're on time and we're putting energy in and we're positive and we're looking for solutions and we're, you know, that honors, I think that honors God, and we look different.
Awesome. So we'll jump into things, and I'm here with Justin Curry. Really appreciate you making the time for us. And essentially, we'll start off with one question, and we'd love to get some more background about your career and what you've done and the work you're doing with Realty North. But the first question, like I said, was, how does being a person of faith make you more successful at the work itself that you're actually doing?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, I would say an expectation of success because you're a person of faith is probably not something that I think you can count on. But I think your ability to deal with the human side of running a business, it's a lot about people more than money. Regardless of being a chartered accountant, I view my strength as actually dealing with others. And I think that the emotional intelligence, biblical principles have been used for millennia. The Judaics of Christian law, our law comes from that. And I think even business ethics, it's rare that your Christian faith wouldn't be an asset as you interact with suppliers, employees, other shareholders, good governance structures. So I think from that standpoint, it gives you a great foundation. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that because I'm a Christian, I will achieve great success. And to that degree, what does success mean? Many people would define it differently. And I think a balance of how you find passion in your vocation and doing God's calling is probably success. So certainly from a monetary standpoint, I've never counted on my going to church to equate into a direct correlation to my bank account. But I think certainly I absolutely believe that having a foundation of faith has made me more successful in how I encounter and move through my vocation.
Yeah, that's interesting. And well, it's a bummer that if I go to church, I can't just be successful. But I love that idea of the emotional intelligence aspect. I feel like that's coming up more and more in business topics and, that people side. How have you seen that? And if you wouldn't mind, like kind of your role right now at Realty North, and I know some of your other businesses, what is it like? What's your day to day? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've made a transition where I'm now largely accomplishing through others. And so I'm actually investing. I own part of an industrial maintenance and construction company with a partner. And then I've started a public company where we invest in private businesses. So that's an interesting evolution to not necessarily have control, but you have influence, and how you interact with people really sets the tone for that relationship. Earlier on in my career, I really had to get, I was pretty type A, very motivated, it probably had a frenetic energy about it. And I really had to learn that, command and control was not the right, it was a way to get things done, but wasn't usually the best way to get things done. So I started out, I was very fortunate when I finished my CPA training, I went into my first job in industry, and I'd had some supervisory experience, but I really got thrown in the deep end. We had a management team of about eight Christian guys, and we were in a business that was scaling rapidly. We went from about $35 million to $200 million in 5 years.
Wow.
And that organic growth and through acquisitions. And so I was 26 years old, suddenly came in managing a staff of 12 in the finance function, and then all of a sudden was managing a group of 200 people in a business unit. And I think that those challenges of learning, one, that people need to be treated, every individual is different, and your style in terms of how you interact with them. And then secondly, that idea of how to employ and being a servant leader, and by showing Christ, you know, demonstrating Christ-like principles, you can often bring people along because they have a respect for you, regardless of whether they love the job or not. It's about their setting and about how they feel that they're plugged into that group and whether that group has their back. And I think that, you know, that's probably been the hallmark of my success, as I've been able to rise from being a controller to a director of finance to VP of finance to CFO to a chief operating officer to CEO of two companies now. You know, that's probably been the linchpin, is recognizing that really authority is not the way to accomplish. Influence is the way to accomplish. And then how do you get that right to have influence? And it's very rare that doesn't come down to, people seeing how you act and your integrity, your capacity to actually be involved and be an advocate for them and their.
Yeah, no, I love that idea of the authority is the way, is not the way to accomplish, but the influence to influence is the way to accomplish. How can you expand on that in terms of the influencing versus authority?
Well, I think authority, your position, regardless of where you are in life, you are given some authority within the context of your role, whether you're an accounting supervisor and you're managing two clerks, or whether you're a lifeguard and you're telling other lifeguards and or patrons what to do. Where it extends in terms of the influence aspect that I think is unique is that influence can be achieved many different ways, but it's informal, and it's actually the way most organizations work. If you actually break apart a company, there's a formal chart of authority, but very few decisions are actually made through that formal chart of authority. I think most companies are a group of tribes. Most senior leaders would have a group of advisors around them that they would go to seek input and advice. And to be part of that informal network of influence requires a much different skill set. And I think it speaks to, do you have that influence both across to your peers? Do you have that influence to those that work below you in that organization? And do you have the influence of those above you in your organization? And I think if you are doing things in a way that is Christ-like and is for the betterment of the organization and the people that you're dealing with, and you're not trying to play political games and you're not at the water cooler gossiping, I think that there's a lot of how to maintain your brand in a business, and if you're not able to point to the fact that you do have this informal influence from a 360 degree perspective, both from subordinates, from peers within the organization, and from people above you, and regardless of the formal chart of authority, how are you viewed? I think that speaks more readily to your capacity to create change, because people don't change just because they're getting told to change. They change because someone's leading them through vision from one point to another, or they may change because they respect you enough to go, I don't agree with this, but I respect Justin enough that I will follow him, knowing that in the past he didn't lead me astray. So I think that, you know, that's from an influence standpoint, you can't just look at it from one dimension. It's how are you influencing multiple levels in the organization, and potentially even beyond your organization, suppliers, customers. It speaks to those circles of influence that, and how large do they really be?
Yeah, that's really good. Because I feel like it's really easy to get in the mindset of, well, this is where I am, but you have to think about, where is the organization going? Where are you going in your career? Where's the direction we're heading? And having that informal authority does give you the ability to create change. That's really good. One of the questions here that we kind of talked about was, in terms of being in a job that you don't really like, or how do you honor job? How do you honor God and when you're in that position? Maybe, business is muddy, right? Every kind of career can be muddy. I think we oftentimes, one of the things we talk about in our group is that nonprofits and pastors, it feels like they're doing all the right things, but us in a secular job, it's like there's more of a muddiness to it. So how do you honor God in a place that a job you don't really like?
Yeah, I mean, I find that one a difficult question, because I probably look back at my career and there's many situations within roles that I've found difficult, but it would be hard to say that I didn't like the job. I've always sort of tried to create an environment where I am not a victim. I can actually influence and change my situation. I think there's been situations that if I go, this is not working for me, then, hey God, what's the exit plan, and how do I do this in a way that honors you? I mean, the one thing for sure, I've made several career changes in terms of moving from the accounting role to an operational role to then investing and operating a business from a governance standpoint. And I think every one of those evolutions comes with a responsibility to not burn bridges. And so, how do you get out of a situation where you've met your commitments? How can you look at the situation? Oftentimes, you're gaining a lot of experience through difficulty. And so there's been instances like having to downsize a company and having to let people go. That is incredibly painful. And I'd say I didn't like that situation, but it's probably served me in good stead to not repeat the same mistakes again. And also, I think sometimes our real world sort of workplace experience, you also have to look at it and go, how can I translate that to kingdom work? If you're volunteering to sort of greet people at church or do the coffee, well, admirable. I don't think it's always the best use of entrepreneurs and or business people's time when they have a much greater contribution than they can make. And I think part of that is sometimes God might be preparing you, putting you through some incredibly difficult situations in your career. If it's constant and you hate it, well, you need to have a plan for exit. But there's, I think there's value in some of the difficulties. And I went through the sort of tech bubble bursting and having to work in an industry that had to grapple with that and try to recover and battle our way through. And we did that. But I think that experience of both restructuring a business served me well. Had to do a lot of complex calculations and tax planning that I hate. I'm not a tax guy, but it was part of the formative part of my training for being a CPA. And that has come back to help me work with several churches where we've gone through complex building programs. And I've been able to use my modeling skills with Excel spreadsheets, with tax, with fundraising. Different bond programs. So I think there's things where I think you can also look at it and go, within the situation, what am I owning out of it? So am I contributing to why I don't like it? What's my long-term exit in a way that I don't burn bridges and that I really move on to something that's different because I'm not a victim? But I think fundamentally I would caution people to also go, am I learning through this pain and will it end? If there is that season coming to an end, then how do I employ that in my kingdom work to make a difference?
Yeah, it's interesting, speaking about how, the real world work experience can be even greater than, serving in the church. And I think oftentimes Christian business people don't necessarily look at that, or people in the marketplace. Like, what would you say to a guy that, loves God, serving God, but for some reason is just overly questioning himself in terms of, am I in the right place? Because maybe he feels like he should be a pastor, or he or she feels like they should be maybe in a nonprofit, like full-time ministry type position. Obviously every situation is extremely unique. So it's like you could, blanket everything, but I think that's interesting that, our real world experience can be a huge benefit to the church. So what would you say to those kind of people?
Yeah, I think once again, it is very situational. Each person would be different. But for myself, I contemplate that earlier in my career. At different junctures, considered moving to a not-for-profit, or although I have been on the board of several not-for-profits and to be active in the Christian school movement, several churches, building programs and working with them, I've never done it on a full-time basis. And I do think that there's some that are called, and so clearly if you're called, but my vocation as a chartered accountant is a calling. I read the Canadian Tire annual report at age 13 and knew I wanted to be a chartered accountant.
Oh, wow.
I think that following God's leading, if you're meant to be something, you're meant to be something. How you translate that into how you employ that in the world of the range of opportunities is probably more unique and needs the discernment. For every not-for-profit, there has to be a funder, and I think that there's that balance between those who claim, well, I will be a funder of not-for-profits, or I'll be a partner and just do work to create wealth or create income to do that. And I think, I would subscribe that I feel called to do that and donate generously to causes. But I think you can also, again, then get lost in the sort of theoretical, and you're never actually doing something on a practical basis. And I think there's some balance too, that I think we should all be doing kingdom work in a way that we're touching lives, wrestling with issues, and dealing with people on an individual level, which fundamentally is why the church is so effective. It's the local church is the hope of the world because it can reach people, and so I think that we have to balance that out. But I do think that there are a lot of people that are gifted, and God has empowered them to some degree to have the gift of creating wealth. And so long as they're responsible with how to use that, and there's a humility around the fact that it's God's gifting and that the resources are of God's, then they should not shy away from using those. What I do think you've got to be careful of is sometimes people go, well, once I make a million, or once I get to 10 million, then I'll give away a million. And and my caution would just be, I think, the principle and parable of the talents of doesn't matter what you're given, how you're employing it, and how you're investing your time, energy, and resources count from the time that you're 20 on. I mean, if you're not tithing when you're 20, it's very unlikely that you're going to be tithing and being faithful for using your resources when you're 50. You might feel like you, you have to hit a critical juncture. But, you know, so a little bit of a long-winded answer. Just, you know, my caution would be for those who want and feel that they're led to be a funder of organizations, find those things that you're passionate about and start funding them when they're small. You know, go and learn, sit on a board, be involved, donate. You don't have to do things at a scale that's massive. You just have to do things at a scale that's appropriate. But I certainly would say that people that have a vocation and they were called to their vocation, or they know that they're passionate about what they're doing, and that is equally as valuable to God as a pastor.
Hmm. Yeah, and how do you go about, I mean, you know, you talked about how you read the CPA, what is it, the Canadian CPA guide?
Oh, I you know, Canadian Tire is basically like your Lowe's. So I read the, you know, the Canadian Tire annual report and knew at 13 that I wanted to be an accountant, so.
Got it, the annual report, okay. So how, you know, for those of us, you know, that are looking for their vocation, how do you, you know, how do you discern God's calling vocationally? Like, how would you go? How would you advise people like that?
I mean, I probably, for me, I certainly knew that the skill set around business, entrepreneurship, and finances were innate and represented fairly young, so I didn't have to contemplate that. But when I've had to make significant changes to move into an operational role or to become an investor, I think that there's, you know, there's several things. The one which is just, what gives you energy? I mean, if you are passionate about something, and you know, for me, part of my passion comes from even being an investor, is looking at someone else's business and helping them. So this idea of almost being a consultant or a sounding board and offering suggestions for how to improve, you know, that's for me a day spent on a manufacturing floor in a business is like a day in heaven. I could ask questions forever. So I think the first thing is, are you passionate about something? So if you have a passion and it gives you energy, that's one thing that really is important. The next would be, you know, can your passion translate into, you know, economic gain? And so is there a market for what you're passionate about? Because I think sometimes people are a bit too niche and aren't recognizing that they still need to provide, and that there's a balance as a you know, whether it's a, for myself, as certainly as a husband and as a father, I have an obligation to provide, and so I've had to make certain career choices probably where I've sacrificed risk reward opportunities where I go, this is going to be a better choice in terms of my allocation of time and the risk reward profile for my family, and you know, I'm fully confident that God will allow me other opportunities in the future. So I think, you know, I think you've got to marry up that passion versus the economics, and then I think there's an affirmation piece from those around you that you trust. Whether I'd especially say spouses are important. If you don't have a supportive spouse, you really don't have a mandate success. I mean, yes, God can say you're called to something, but my wife has followed me from, we've moved 12 times, lived in 6 different cities, several countries. All of those were big decisions. And so for her to be willing to follow, in essence, and give up her career opportunities to do that was a gift. And my perspective would be, I have ignored her advice at my peril. And so I've done it a couple of times, and it's always come back to bite me. And so while I certainly believe prayerful discernment is important, I think if you don't have a supportive spouse and they aren't affirming you in that role and in that vocation, you're probably not going to be successful. And then I think that it needs to be broader than that. I think you need to have friends, you know, close family, friends, your pastor, you know, if people need it, if people are pointing out you're really amazing at something, you don't necessarily know it because it's just easy to you. It comes naturally. So for myself, I would say, you know, seeing ahead and being able to do strategic thinking and come up with the analyze of an organization or a situation, this is what needs to be done. To me, it appears self-evident and obvious. If people are coming back and saying, hey, you're really good at leading an organization through change, good strategy, well, then you probably want to include that in your vocation. So, you know, I think so. Passion, affirmation from a broad group, and married to some form of reality check. So, are you going to provide meet the needs of those around you that are counting on you, that will allow your life to go well? And then, you know, prayerful discernment sort of layered over all of those as the overarching concept.
Hmm. Yeah, that's, and I mean, you started off the, you know, our chat discussing about that initial period of business growth where you guys went from like 12 to 200 people. And there was sort of this, you know, you were young, did you get a lot of affirmation during that period? Was that kind of like a part of discovering that, you know, what eventually led you to being on a manufacturing floor, being able to decide and, you know, strategy and innovation? Is that kind of like where that started to come about, or?
I mean, I think I was always pretty adventurous. I mean, I started out working for the Auditor General's Office of for Canada, and actually recognized that, you know, government stifles innovation and crushes your entrepreneurial spirit. So once I got out of that, I sort of was able to broaden. That initial experience, I think, was more an opportunity. I was very fortunate to be a part of a group where we were young. We probably didn't know the bounds of what convention would say we should or could have been doing as a business. And so we were willing to you know, embrace allowing people to have pretty broad mandates and seeing whether they could succeed. So I had the fortune of being given a lot of authority and scope at a pretty young age. But I think that you only get that if you're naturally inquisitive, are willing to then own up to your mistakes. And the reality is, you know, you recognize initiative, but you only reward results. And so I think we were a company that rewarded those that helped us to advance. We were very centered around people in that organization. We, you know, we actually in that period scaled from about 200 people to about 2,000 people in that five, six year period. And, you know, even the, you know, the our concept of business units was driven off of relational interaction. And so we believe that every business unit should be maximum 150 to 200 people so that you could maintain a knowledge of who to go to within your business. Because it was a way to get around bureaucracy to ensure that, you know, people could remember the 150 to 200 names in their business unit, but they didn't feel part of a massive corporate machine. And so that business has gone on to, you know, further success. I've similarly helped to scale up an aerospace business that had 700 people reporting into me. And with each incremental opportunity, there's probably things that you've learned from the past that you bring forward as a model to help you succeed in the future. But you have to have an openness to just go, hey, I've been thrown into something new, and finding mentors, finding people that can come alongside, and then, you know, a lot of prayer and humility to go, I don't know the course of action, and I'm going to try to read, learn. I certainly would say for every leader, they are a reader. Certain readers may not be leaders, but every leader should be a reader. And so, you know, my view would be whether you're reading books on spirituality, books on, you know, business ethics, books that will give you some context for models to help grow your organization. I'm probably reading, you know, 2 to 4 books a month, and I think that's been a hallmark for being able to short maybe, you know, shorten the cycle of growth, and likewise being in a peer or forum where you can share candidly about your situation and get input of shared experience. So those two things have probably been hallmarks for me being able to grow and ascend fairly rapidly, while still being able to, you know, deliver on what I was required to do in those roles.
So the one being the reading and the learning, and then the second being feedback, and I guess, well, like,
yeah. Yeah, peer forum, my belief on the peer forum thing is being in a room that where there's a, you know, whether it's friends that are trusted advisors, where there's a confidentiality around anything that's discussed, and you're putting on table, leadership can be a lonely experience. So I think oftentimes you can't serve your, you know, another peer in your workplace to deal with issues. And so if you have a place that you can bring complex situations or struggles to, and you get input through other people's learning and experience, it can be an incredibly powerful model. And so,
Are you saying peer forum?
Peer forum, yeah. So there's
peer forum. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so there's some groups that are secular, and other groups that are Christian that have the same model. And I think it is. It's a powerful way to accelerate your leadership journey.
Mm. Yeah, and that ties right back into, I mean, just the importance of people within a business.
I mean, certainly there's lots of different models, but it comes down to, yeah, you know, absolutely. How do you empower others to, you know, you are so limited by the hours that you have in a day, mm-hmm. and you work your way up in an organization, the more you realize that you have such a finite amount of time that you can touch each stakeholder group and spend time with people. So how do you make it, how do you pick, you know, some key people that you can invest time and energy into? And I think that discipleship model, you can see how effective it was with Jesus and what he was able to accomplish. Surely that's something that we should be trying to replicate elsewhere.
So in terms of your experience with business, and you know, because obviously you want your colleagues to be successful, you want your clients to be successful, but sometimes it's difficult to sort of match them up. At least, you know, for me, like I'm a salesperson. I want the success of my clients, but sometimes a client has a demand, and then you have your coworkers, and sometimes maybe the coworker isn't on board, and you're trying to, and sometimes things are just happening fast. But how do you balance, you know, what's more important, the success of the business or the success of, your colleagues, if that makes sense? And I can maybe rephrase it, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be situations where you can't always have a situation where everyone wins. I certainly think that the Stephen Covey approach around, you know, looking for a way to think around the framework of a win-win solution is one important aspect. Currently reviewed.
And what is that approach? What is Stephen Covey? What is that? Sorry.
Oh, so yeah, Stephen Covey is the seven habits principles. So, okay. You know, so there's seven habits around disciplines for success in life, and I think that they're actually incredibly effective. And my view would be, all these things are somewhat. There's different eras and different gurus, but my view would be that, you know, Stephen Covey and Jim Collins and Patrick Lencioni are probably the three most influential business thought leaders, and Stephen Covey's principles are based on, my view, Judeo-Christian principles that he's brought into place around thinking and empowering yourself to make change in your organization. And so, but one of the key parts is this idea of, the one is the individual victory, the other one is sort of the a group victory. And so how do you think from that perspective, having a win-win perspective? So if you're fighting over an orange and the solution was to cut the orange in half, so you each get half. If one guy was the baker and he's just looking for the orange rind, and the other one was looking for the orange to eat the segments, and no one thought to actually go, well, what were you actually wanting out of this? There's a lot that could be missed in context. And so I think, one, having a long-term view, oftentimes as a salesperson in my role at Royalty North, and previously as well, I'm always trying to look at going to build a relationship. What's the right solution for this person, given the fact pattern that they're giving me right now? And if I'm not that solution, if I know that I shouldn't really be in business or in partnership with this person because it's the wrong stage in their business timeline, or because they could get another cheaper form of capital, then it's incumbent on me to act with integrity and offer that up. There's probably going to be could be perceived as a win-lose right now. They've won, they've got a cheaper form of capital and have been able to get a relationship. But for myself, I'm looking at this going, that relationship could pay back over 10 years, 25 years, 35 years. So I think if you have a broader perspective than just your immediate situation, I think that's something people don't realize is how powerful their network becomes. Strong relationships that are based on high integrity and doing the right thing for the other party. And if you're coming to the table with honesty and an approach to try to meet the other person's needs, I don't think that you necessarily have to think about it in terms of the win for the business versus your colleagues. I do think that there's some situations where, well, there's business priorities and in the short term, something has to happen and maybe someone doesn't get the vacation time that they wanted to get that. So those hard decisions still have to be made, but sure, every decision can still be made through the lens of going, how do I find the win for both of us? And how do I think about things not from just this individual one situation, but instead the life of this relationship and what it might, my win might come back many, many years down the road. And in fact, the wins usually come back in the weirdest form. They usually come back in the fact that the person never comes back and maybe does business with you, but they tell someone else, look, if you're looking for a partner and you want an honest partner, this go and talk to that group, because they treated me in a way that they weren't self-interested.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Justin, I know we're coming up on your time, and I know I reserved 45 minutes, so I want to be extremely cognizant and really appreciate you sharing with us. I think these are some awesome things to live by and things to understand, so I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem, Josh. And certainly if you have any follow-up questions, happy to answer them. And I hope it goes really well with your group. And it does sound like your group, even having the ambition to search for these answers and wrestle with the things of faith, it's a great journey. And I think that leadership is something that all of us can aspire to, whether regardless of what role we're in. And so I just think that it's great that you have a supportive pastor and that you guys are wrestling with it. One of my favorite verses is Philippians 2:14-15. It's sort of do everything without grumbling or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Mm. Then shine among them like stars in the sky. And my perspective is, oftentimes in the workplace, we should be appearing different. If we're grumbling and gossiping and having issues, no one sees us as different. If we're sitting there and we're on time and we're putting energy in and we're positive and we're looking for solutions and we're that honors God, and we look different. We'll shine like stars. And you know, I firmly believe that that's the, you know, for my career growth, just having that perspective to go, let me go into this and really enjoy it, and make, just be me and live my values and faith, and I'm gonna appear different because of that, and I believe that that's happened.
Oh man, I love that shine like stars picture. What a great way to view what our goal is.
Yeah. So good luck with the group, and feel if I'm in Chicago, I'll definitely stop in and we can get a coffee together and I'll see how it went.
Yeah, absolutely. When you come to Chicago, lunch on me. Like, I would love to. You know, you're definitely paying it forward here by sharing with some other brothers. And so, yeah, definitely let me know.
Hey, guys, quick reminder again to join the Facebook group. Search Daniel Dinners on Facebook to request to join the private group. If we contribute to the discussion, the more we help not only ourselves, but others as well.